Unfiltered opinions.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
As you secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
Woo! I'm Jimmy Leon.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Insider Exchange. We continue to live in the 2020 Thrive simulation that has budget speech being cancelled, CPI data being put back, and Sean's predictions getting us all in a knot. We're going to be taking a look at all of these things in Market Matters, and we've got Sean Dendere in studio to answer for his crimes around load shedding. So we've got lots to tune into. Thanks, folks, for jumping on the live with us. As I said, we've got Sean Dendere, Trading Services Manager at Thrive, joining us in studio this week to take a look at some of these developments. Good morning, Sean. Ever since
Morning,
you
Jimmy.
Spoke on load shedding as your unfiltered opinion, we've been back there a lot more than we'd like to be, Sean. Speak.
All right, let's start here. Do we have load shedding today?
We had it yesterday.
We did have it yesterday.
And
but
yes,
when
actually
I looked
this
at
morning
the
as well.
App this morning, right, I was meant to have load shedding and there was power. So I was like, okay, great. I guess we'll pass the tide. But one thing I'm going to stop doing, no more predictions here. First was the Rand, went terribly wrong. Load shedding, terribly long. So no more predictions, no more unfiltered opinions from me, because whatever happens, whatever I say, the opposite happens.
Well, that's the other thing we could do. Sean could keep giving us predictions and everybody could just do the opposite thing, right? Yeah, that happens. That's it. There we exactly. go.
I got back from a poiki on Saturday night to no water, no power. Mm-hmm. By the time I woke up, they were both back, but it was like quite rough. You know the thing, you live in Joburg, Wi-Fi, water, power, you can pick two, but not three. I didn't even have two.
And the nice, the weird thing is you live in a nice part of Johannesburg, not even a part that struggles to get service delivery.
No.
Speaking of service delivery, probably one of the quickest that we've seen. The Gautrain tunnel has been repaired. Perhaps we should outsource those guys to go and take a look at Bree Street. Is it too late?
Not too late. Funny enough, right, with regards to the Gautrain tunnel thing, there was a lady that I met last week. So I go to a biokineticist twice a week because I had a knee surgery, long story. Long story short, anyways, we're getting that fixed. But then there was a lady who actually worked for the company that was actually doing the retunneling of the Gautrain, and they seemed quite positive, upbeat. And she told me that, oh, no, it's going to be done really quickly. And I didn't believe her. And today you're actually giving me confirmation.
That's it.
So I tell her when I see her again, well done, guys.
it's back today. I mean, it's absolutely, I mean, it wasn't that big a hole.
No, it wasn't.
But it was someone in Killarney. And then apparently what happened was they drilled the hole, which you've got to get permission, but no one does. And then they realized, ooh, so they backed up and put concrete on top, which a plug, which made the whole thing just worse. But I mean, I'm trying to work out when it happened. But yeah, it was up and running this morning, Monday.
Do we have an update on Bree Street? I wonder if we do. If anyone knows what's happening with that, let us know. But that's not what we're discussing. We're taking a look at a budget speech that was postponed. We're taking a look at CPI data that was postponed. And we expect PCE data out of the US if we have time for that. Let's start, I suppose, with the CPI data, because that's a smaller thing to look at. Si, you said there's something about methodology.
Yeah, so they're changing methodology, which they do every so often, right? They take out CDs and or optical discs. This folks looking at me, lots of optical discs. They take out optical discs and put in streaming. So they do this every couple of years. The last one was 3 or 4 years ago, so now they've done it again. And they put a note out Monday, Tuesday last week saying the Wednesday release was going to be pushed back a week as they just verified and validated the data.
Do you think it's true? Yeah, because I think there's a lot happening that's getting postponed. So
it was weird.
It's a nice because, coincidence.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, as a stats essay, and I'm not a statistician, I would have thought that you know that you've got the new methodology, and you've frankly been working on this for, you know, I mean, I don't know, for 6 months you're running two sets of data or something. It seemed weird, although I can't find the conspiracy theory. But anyway, apparently it's this Wednesday.
Okay. That's a bit of, yeah, no, as you're saying, Sean, the timing is convenient because we thought we were going to have a budget speech.
100%.
We haven't had a budget speech. And that's what we're going to be taking a look at in our deep dive. Just a heads up for those that are wanting to tune into that. We're going to be diving into the 2% VAT increase that was proposed in the documentation. We're going to look at that as part of our deep dive and try and unpack what that really means for consumers. So stick around for that. We'll come back to that in a second. But the budget speech, we got the speech. Now, for those that aren't aware, when we kind of do radio and things, I get given the speech just before the minister delivers the speech, because I have to do reactions immediately after the speech. And I got the speech and I read through the speech, and there were so many things that I didn't want to read in that speech. But the speech got cancelled.
So it was quite fun. I land in Cape Town for the budget. About 1:30, my driver man turns on the wireless. There's Jimmy, makes me famous. It's like, hey, I know that. He's like, oh, really? Anyway, so there's my half hour of, and we're talking about the budget and how bad. And the guy's like, is he going to do VAT? And I'm like, no, there's been, because remember when we did VAT last time, Melissa Gagaba, there was like consultation for months.
A lot. For a long time.
Yeah. And then it went up only 1% and everything was fine. And I'm like, no, no, no. And then I'm doing an event that evening and there's some journos on it. And they're messaging me saying, we've been told that there is a press conference across the street. And I'm like, that makes no sense. So I messaged someone who'd been in lockdown, because usually the minister will do a press conference to people in lockdown ahead of the speech. And I said, did you get your press conference? No. I'm like, that's just weird. And they said, no, no, we've now been told to go across the street. I get to my place by 2:00, nothing's happening. I can hear you like, this is getting long. And as I get out the car, like 2:05, the driver's like, they canceled the budget. So truthfully, we had a budget event that evening. It was a whole lot better because we didn't have to speak about all the boring numbers. We could speak big picture and have fun and stuff. And
yeah,
no budget.
The good thing is, I mean, you probably have another trip to Cape Town for the real budget speech. something to look forward to.
So I need to.
To
plan it better, because I was in, so firstly, it wasn't Cape Town. I went to Durbanville. We should be quite clear about that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, a wine farm, but still. And I think I was there for 16 hours. I need to do these things.
Nice. No, the budget speech was, it was absolute chaos, because the other thing from our side when that happened was, we are live on radio. So I'm reacting in real time what I'm seeing on a TV screen, and I can't listen to the audio of the TV screen and do my show, because that audio is going to interfere with the show. So I'm watching the TV on mute effectively. And when it hit 2:05, I was like, this minister's never been late for a budget speech.
No.
Ever.
No.
He's never been late to deliver one. When it hit 2:10, I said something had to be wrong here, but I still didn't think it would be cancelled. I thought, okay, we'd start late because,
postponement, right?
You know, but then the postponement was quite remarkable, and there was a lot of reaction around that. There was a lot of reaction around why it was postponed, who's actually calling the shots, and all sorts of things there. And the Rand, to your credits, you and I were chatting about the Rand a little earlier to say it's now back at 18:30, but on that day, in that hour, it got as high as 18:60.
Yeah, but it had been, so in the morning when I did my show, which was what, 6:00, 6:30, it was 18:40.
Yeah.
By the time I'm in Cape Town, it's 1850, 1:52.
Yes, just before the speech was set to start, yes.
Went to 59:60, and now it's back, well, actually at 38. But I mean, the Rand was like, yeah, like, who needs a budget anyway?
But
the fun fact is, absent of a budget. Well, so if you look at the laws, PFMA, whatever those laws are, absent of a new budget, we just carry on going with last year's numbers. Nice and simple.
But I think for my side, right, is that, okay, we look at, speaking to the Rand, and this is my opinion, hopefully it doesn't go left. I think it's just, you know, it was the Rand reacted to a sign of political stability. Because think about it, this budget, we're looking at it from a place that, okay, the ANC is going to table the budget, right? And then from a GNU perspective, they essentially rejected the budget.
Yeah.
And then we went back to the drawing board, right? So for me, it's like, okay, cool. There's no room to panic, because in my opinion, democracy is actually at work.
Yeah.
It would have been different if the budget just came in and said, okay, cool, 17% VAT. Then what was going to happen the next day in terms of parliament, the general public, how we're all going to react, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it was a nice touch for democracy, in my opinion.
So something interesting on that democracy note that I heard from the CIC of the EFF, Julius Malema, he for once actually said something that had a lot of sense to it around that. He said, this budget is to be tabled and proposed. And when you look at the wording in the speech,
he says, I propose
this increase, which means there's still opportunity after that to debate it. And it's one of those things where, while I see what you're saying about the political stuff showing democracy, I looked at it from the perspective of, Julius had a good point to say, you're now making a national issue a political issue. Because in tabling the budget speech, it was a national issue of national interest, not of political parties. The same way that the president's right to appoint cabinet ministers and deputy presidents and all of that has nothing to do with the ANC, but is a function that's given to him as head of state, right?
Correct.
Similar to how the minister's ability to table the budget is a national matter, not a political matter. And so Julius made a valid point to say it should have been tabled regardless, debated in parliament, rejected, and everybody should have had line of sight of what was being proposed before it was rejected by the GNU. Unless, of course, we're going to argue that the GNU wanted to table something better themselves. That was a very interesting take that he put forward.
That would have, because, I mean, it comes back to, and I like your point. I mean, this GNU has had lots of frictions around land and education and NHI and now budget. And you know what? It's holding through all of it. Hey? These oaks are actually being mature politicians. And yes, we're looking at you orange people. this is like really working properly, like impressively so. And I think it's a big day in our life where, you know, the ANC is having to learn that it's not their budget anymore. It's the GNU budget.
Yes,
it could have been debated because you're 100% right. That line said we are proposing a VAT increase from 15 to 17. It is a proposal. It gets debated and then it gets voted on. That would have been even more messy, but it certainly, in the end, though, they just capitulated. And did you see the press conference at 3 o'clock with the minister, man? Aside from the hot mic moment, which, like, dude.
Oh, what a hot mic moment.
Yeah, but like come on, like media training, like not even 101, 001 anyway. But was he a tetsy minister? Hey? Also, let's take the mature democracy a step further. When you can't get your budget and you've got to delay it or cancel it or postpone it or whatever, I mean, finance ministers and presidents looking at Julius Truss have fallen for worse.
Yeah.
Now, she did table theirs, it just tanked the treasuries, and she got beaten by a lettuce.
Well, to be fair, I think that's probably what, to your point, Sean, around what makes South Africa's democracy a bit more vibrant, and what you said, Sai, around the fact that this was a good thing to happen, is now the Rand has reacted more stably. I think when we come around to the 12th of March, we will kind of have a better understanding of where we're going. It's going to work out in the end.
100%.
But that being said, working out in the end doesn't mean a 2% VAT increase, because that's a whole other conversation. No, that's what we're diving into in the deep dive. And I want to get your thoughts on that, Sean, because obviously we're gonna share our sentiments and our thoughts around that. But a 2% VAT increase is a significant increase to come out of nowhere.
Yeah, so I think that, in my opinion, obviously I'm not a tax expert, but it seems counterproductive. Because if you look at the points, because obviously I also had a look at the budget speech, and the reason why they're proposing it was to increase social grants, increase civil servants' salaries, and there was a third point, right?
Okay, education, cool. I think.
Education. Okay, perfect. So if we look at these salary increases and social grant increases, right? This person is getting more, technically speaking, but their bread basket is becoming more expensive. So is that not counterproductive? Should we not look at other means, like growing our GDP, growing the economy, in order for us to afford those increases? And also, if we look at last year, there was over 40 billion rand in wasteful expenditure. That's money that could have been redirected to a positive effect. So, okay, cool. The revenue man is going to collect more cash, but by increasing VAT. But the bottom line is that I think it's actually going to have a knock-on negative effect to the people it's trying to help. That is my thought on it.
Yeah, so it's three ways you balance the budget, right? Mm. In a country example, you raise taxes, you cut spending, or you grow the economy.
So we're not doing the other two, but we want to use the one to cover the other two.
Yeah. And that, I think that's a fair question to say, really, that's our only option. Mm. In our current budget, you couldn't find some fat. It includes 5.5% salary increases to civil servants and a whole bunch else that is, you know, lurking out there. So I do think, I mean, VAT is a very blunt, and my sense, I don't know, if we start raising VAT every so often because we're in a hole, man, we're going to get VAT to 50% before we are done. I mean, that should really be, we are in a proper hole.
But even then, Sai, even when you look at the VAT increase, and that's what we're going to get into, is what alternative measures are there. There's definitely some fat that can be trimmed from an expenditure point of view. I did a study around it, and we'll get to that in the deep dive. But from a VAT perspective, VAT affects more people. It affects everybody.
Everyone,
And the increase that they're looking at is only set to generate an extra 60 billion rand in revenues.
Yeah. And they wasted 44. Don't forget that.
That's
part.
What I'm saying. So the increase is not even significant enough that it warrants, especially in the view of the commissioner of SARS, Edward Kiswetter, he came out to say rather than increase VAT, and he said this before the speech, rather than increase VAT, why don't we just collect the 800 billion that we haven't been able to collect so far?
Good point.
Correct. You know, 60 billion for us. Big number.
Yeah.
Right?
Massive.
I could retire on 60
billion. If I got 60 billion, there would be signs. Like you would never see Simon
first of all,
again.
I wouldn't be here.
Yes. You would never see me again. Promises around that one. It's a big number, but in the state of a you know, multi-trillion rand budget, it's petty cash.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that is what we're going to be digging into in the deep dive. Tune in for that, folks. Sean, thank you so much for coming through. Always happy to have you in studio.
Always
love your predictions. We always go the opposite direction. We've now learned how to do it. But folks, tune in to the Deep Dive Investor Insights if you want to find out our thoughts around that VAT increase and how we could potentially do things differently to cut back on the budget. We'll leave Market Matters on that note. And we'll be back next week, which is pre the new budget. Or is it 2 weeks before the new budget?
2 weeks to go.
Is it 2 weeks to go? Mm. Yes. So next week would be the 3rd and the budget would be tabled on the 12th. So stick around. We'll be back with our live stream every Monday between now and the new budget. Hopefully we actually get the budget. 100%. Until then. And we move on to our deep dive. This week, we are diving into the VAT increase that never took place. We're going to look at the merits behind it, whether or not it was absolutely necessary and the only thing that could have been done, and where we go to from here.
Back to Cape Town on the 12th of March. That's the first thing we do, right?
The first thing, to hear whether or not this VAT increase is going to come out. I mean, 2% in numbers terms. This is according to National Treasury, not according to me. As part of that budget speech at the table, they said the 2% would work out to around 58 to 60 billion rands in added revenue per year for the state, I suppose, right? And for me, I'd done a random exercise ahead of the 2024 budget speech. So ahead of last year's budget speech, I'd done a random exercise on how to save 30 billion rand from the budget, which by the 2% standards is 1%, right? Mm-hmm. And I found that you could do two things and you would save the 30 billion rand from our expenditure side of it. Before I get into that, Sai, I want you to recap on those three things you said. You said a budget, adjusting a budget is three things. It's increasing revenues.
Which is tax.
Okay.
Well, there's two ways to increase revenue. Tax or growth,
okay.
And then the other one is cut spending.
Right.
It's always alarmingly easy, it seems, in South Africa's example. I mean, 20 years ago, Trevor Manuel was cutting our taxes, our income tax and stuff. But, you know, it's a really blunt and lazy way to say we've got to do this by, you know, doing a 2% VAT. I mean, 60 billion, and you've got some numbers there. Come on, really? And if we were doing 4% growth, we wouldn't need any of this.
We wouldn't. It wouldn't matter.
It wouldn't make
a difference.
And how much money have we given to SOEs over the last decade? Well, 10 times that?
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at an SOE like Post Office, they're looking for 4 billion rand right now, right? So interestingly enough, in that budget speech that we didn't have tabled, there was no mention of SOE bailouts, but we might be in for some news coming out in a couple of weeks on the 12th of March. So we'll see how that shapes up. But back to the numbers. Yes. So you said that one of the methods is trimming the fat.
Mm.
So the exercise I did, I looked at a very specific cohort of individuals. I looked at just 55,000 government officials. Now, not government officials. So remember, the public sector wage bill and the government employees bill accounts for everyone from teachers to nurses to doctors.
Policemen.
Right.
Parliamentarians.
Right. Now, I specifically didn't look at the lower end, the teachers, the nurses, the firemen, the police. I looked at individuals earning 1.2 million rand or more.
Okay,
so that would be, right. So that would be your director generals. That would be your members of parliament. That would be your higher end of that scale. And I found that if we slash the salaries of 55,000 specific individuals earning above 1.2 million from 1.2 million just to 750,000 rand. And the reason I used 750,000 rand was quite interesting because Glassdoor said to me that the average PhD lecturer in South Africa, or the average person with a doctorate, earns 750,000 rand per annum. The average medical doctor earns about 720,000 rand per annum. So I kind of used that as a barometer to say you'd still be getting paid the equivalent of a
grand
PhD.
A year.
Right.
Month, rather. It's money.
So if we cut just that, in terms of trimming the fat, those 55,000 salaries specifically, we would save from the 780 billion rand of the public sector wage bill, we would save 26.4 billion rand off of just those numbers. Just 55,000 people would save 26 billion rand, right? Then I looked at the second line item, VIP protection. Yeah. And now, obviously, that's not going to be something that people want to hear about. But VIP protection that was spent at the time I was looking at it was around 3.4 billion rand. Of that 3.4 billion rand, 2 billion rand was being spent on 280 individuals, right? Stay with me here. Stay with me for a second. It makes sense. That 2 billion over 280 individuals works out to 7.142 million rand per individual per year on security. Now, I don't know how much an X5 costs. I don't know how much state security costs, but surely we don't need to be spending that much money. Anyway, put that number aside. So I took the 3.4 billion less the 2 billion, a couple of rounding errors here and there, got us to what we were looking at in terms of the 3.4 billion, adding that to the 26.4 that we saved on the public sector wage bill side of it, and we get 30 billion rand of savings. There's 1% of that we don't need to cut.
And the rest is, I mean, I go back to an old story, and I can't remember the numbers, but they're out of date. We spend 5 times more per student than Mozambique on education, and yet they're in the top quartile and we're in the bottom quartile. Mm. And that just says to you, it's not about having the money, which we don't have. We are so, and it's not even about Zondo and fraud and corruption and everything. It's just we are so inefficient at spending it. And sometimes it's sad too. And because, I mean, there are brilliant teachers out there, but there are also ghost teachers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that, and is cutting a budget painful? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, of course it is. But let's be clear, this is like times require it.
That's it. This is for the greater good. This is one of those times where you don't need to be having the poorest of the poor carry a burden for
and that
an overweight.
Hit poor people disproportionately because they tend to spend all their money, whereas us rich folks are going to save some and et cetera. So, yeah.
That's it.
And I know that I mean, that the deep irony is that finally they want to move poultry to VAT-free. Man, Chris Kitt has been saying that for 20 years. He retires. And it happened.
That's it. The poultry association themselves have also been saying, guys, we don't understand this. We don't understand how this is. And I think the last stat I remember, I vaguely remember this. I don't know if it's 100% correct, but I think it was that the poultry segment made up 60% of the protein consumption of South Africans, if I remember correctly. So it was significant. It was more than 50%. It was one of those things where it was a staple for many South Africans.
Yeah.
And so for you to not have that VAT exempt from the beginning or VAT reduced also didn't really make sense. But the things that we're saying here are not what people want to hear. For anyone that's interested in those numbers and looking at those numbers that I mentioned a little earlier, there is an article that I had written and published. It is in the public domain, so you can go re-verify those numbers yourselves. I'll share the link to the article when we put up the episode. You can very freely go and look at those numbers. If you disagree with them, I'd love to hear your take on that as well. But yes, there are other ways to fix this. One of those other ways is what Commissioner of SARS, Edward Kiesvetter, said. And he was very clear
like
that there's no reason to increase VAT. And I've always appreciated his honesty. I speak to him every budget, every year without fail, even during the midterm budget, sometimes we catch up. But every year without fail, he says, this is what SARS is doing. This is what we need to do. This is where we need to optimize things. He's really doing what he was put as the commissioner to do. And for him to come out before the budget speech and say, this is not necessary.
He knows SARS inside out. So if he's saying there's 800, when he said 800 billion, now he's not going to catch all of it. But if you just catch 10% of it, boom, we can actually drop fat a percent.
That's
maybe.
It
just, and it goes back to, it's the laziness of it. It's like, you know, when you're doing a household budget and there's not enough money and instead you say, ugh, I'll get a side hustle.
I'll just borrow from the credit card.
Or something. It's like, no man, that's just like that's not practical. Mm. Like the budgets are hard. Mm. Budgets are often painful. Ours is going to be both hard and painful. Make it happen.
I'm afraid to explore. So after I did this exercise with the numbers, it literally terrified me to go and look for other things. So think about Doge, right? Mm-hmm. Elon Musk, the US, setting up this, looking for inefficiencies and all of that. Mm-hmm. If we were to do the same exercise in South Africa, I'm afraid of what we would find.
Yeah. So Elon Musk isn't finding much so far. He's just randomly.
Picking at things.
But the whole thing, and it's where Elon's going wrong with Doge. Someone said to him the weekend, it's actually pronounced doggy. Where he's going wrong with it is he just goes in and he's firing individuals willy-nilly and people he doesn't like and cancelling contracts he doesn't like, etc. But good old-fashioned forensic auditing. You go into the department, that's you do it. A forensic audit, you come out the other side and you say there is or there isn't waste happening here. It's not that hard.
So the thing is, in South Africa, we don't need a forensic audit. The AG comes out and says, this is the wasteful expenditure amount. We have the amounts given to us. Mm-hmm. And that's what's confusing is, they tell you up front, this is how much was wasteful expenditure in the past year. This is how much was wasteful expenditure that we reported on. This was things that were unaccounted for. I had a look at the Eskom financials for the latest set of financials. Mm-hmm. And the audit report that comes along the financials. And I discussed these financials with the Eskom CFO, Caleb Kassim. In the audit report, there's 12 pages of material misstatements, things that don't make sense to the auditors, numbers here that don't align here and all of that. How do you have 12 pages of things you need to look at? And then we're going to say that we don't know where to start looking for the money.
Yeah,
the auditors have done the work for you.
There's a place to start right there.
And that wasn't even a forensic audit. That was an annual audit done in regular course of business.
And most of the cities the country over. But ignore the cities because it's a different part of where the money sits. But at our SOEs, at our parliamentary buildings, at all of those sort of things, there is space and there is undoubtedly money which can be picked up. And to your point, the Auditor General points it to us every single year.
That's it. So why are we not making the difference? Instead, why are we then looking to... Okay, so we've been clear that you can reduce expenditure. That's the one method. The other one was increasing revenue. We've discussed that taxing people more or taxing an already overtaxed South African is not the solution.
Yeah.
Let's look at the third one, economic growth.
Well, yeah.
Now, that one seems like a no-brainer, but for some reason, I saw in the budget speech that would have been tabled that they'd revised economic growth down for the 2024 year to 0.8%, down from what they had it in the midterm budget policy statement. So even then, National Treasury seeing that economic growth is not going where it's supposed to be going, but what's being done? Granted, it's not only Treasury's responsibility to fuel growth, but surely we should be...
I mean, what's been done is all the wrong things, like our Transnet doesn't work, our rail lines to Saldanha and Richards Bay coal terminal are broken. We're sitting here in stage 4 load shedding 6 over the weekend. It's all of those things which are fundamentally crippling growth. Now, another, issues around red tape. I mean, here's an example. And again, this is an old report, so I don't remember the number. The threshold for a business to register for VAT is 1 million.
Yes.
When was that put in place? 15 years ago? 20
Possibly.
Years ago?
Yeah.
So it's $1 million. Raise that to 5 million. Take a lot of pressure. So let's be clear. No one is saying, I'm not going to start a business because of VAT threshold.
Yes.
That's bogus. But you've started a little business, and you get to 1 million, and suddenly the amount of paperwork and chaos and craze.
And most of the time, I didn't even know I was going to get to 1 million.
Yeah. And I was speaking to a medical practitioner, a physiotherapist, and she has she's bumping against that. But when she claims in discovery, they pay X. If she's VAT registered, they don't increase it 15%.
Mm-hmm.
They're paying X.
That's it.
So, suddenly it's a case of...
Now I'm not incentivized to grow my business beyond...
There are some easy wins. So Transnet and Eskom are not easy wins, but there are easy wins out there that would just, help us move in the right direction for growth. We've got the turnover tax also for small companies. That's just kind of got lost and vanished. I mean, that should be getting pushed left, right, and center. That is, if you do X amount of revenue, here's how much tax you pay. Don't worry.
That's it.
Paperwork is zero. Simple.
I suppose paperwork is another part of why things go the way they go and why expenditure looks the way it does. Is there's not enough paperwork or there's too much paperwork and things get lost in the paperwork. So paperwork might be part of the problem, I guess. But what we are very clearly understanding is that the solution is not to just increase VAT.
No.
Because as you said in Market Matters, if we start just doing that over and over
every
and over.
Every time we have a problem, we get VAT to 50 before we blink.
That's it.
I remember when GST was 4%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. The answer is not to increase the VAT. There are other ways, and there is definitely fat that can be trimmed. We'll see how the 12th of March unfolds. We suspect we're going to get a VAT increase regardless because, well, nobody really listens to our show from Parliament. But we'll leave deep dive on that note. We're going to get into investor insights. We're going to look at the craze that's taking over in terms of the increase in corporates and companies and asset managers taking on Bitcoin. Seemingly, that is now growing in popularity. But that's where we're leaving the deep dive this week. And we wrap things up with investor insights. We're taking a look at the Bitcoin world or the cryptocurrency world. It seems that's growing in popularity, particularly with asset managers and fund managers looking to allocate monies into that. We might have a Bitcoin or even a crypto specialist come join us at some point to look at this. But for now, we're going to be taking a look at it. We're going to try and see if we can make sense of it. And we're also going to update our wall. We might be adding some very interesting things to the wall that we haven't put on the wall in the past. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be back to that in a second. The Bitcoin side of it, I mean, Bitcoin was the biggest scam in the world until BlackRock decided to launch an ETF.
Well, I mean, so Bitcoin in of itself isn't a scam. Yes. It's used. I mean, things like ransomware and that sort of stuff is fully enabled. Without Bitcoin, it couldn't exist. So, I mean, absolutely in that regard. But it was very much legitimatized. It was just last year.
Yeah, the SEC ruling that you can have ETFs on cryptos and ETFs on Bitcoin. I mean, granted, there were a lot of people that believed in the currency of the cryptocurrency and the cryptocurrency world before that. And there was also a lot of speculators saying who created the coins and all of that. But the reality is we didn't really see institutional flow until those ETFs.
Outside of MicroStrategy. And at that point, it was 40,000 and now it's 95.
Michael Saylor is just loving his life right now.
So he does wonderful. So he sells zero coupon convertible bonds, which he then goes and buys Bitcoin. And currently his stock is trading at about, well, last time I checked, about 2x of NAV.
It was a ridiculous amount. I'll tell you where his share price is at the moment.
But it's like twice NAV.
And that was just because of the Bitcoin holdings. Every time, it's one of those things that's going to go down in history as either the bravest thing a CEO's ever done or the most unnecessary thing a CEO's ever done. But if we look at the fact that the share price at the start of last year would have been around the, call it, so February of last year kind of moved up from $46 to about $100. There was a 100% increase there already, right? 103% or so in that month. From that $100 at its peak in November of last year, in a year, peaked above $500.
Yo.
And that's just plainly because he went long on Bitcoin and he went long at the right time, I suppose, right? So share price now back at 300. Even if we say MicroStrategy goes out at $200 or whatever from a $40 move where a share price hadn't been moving. I mean, you go back to the pandemic and pandemic was like $15, $17 or so.
Never would I have thought
we'd see a $500 stock on this.
Nope.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. And I mean, it's a ballsy strategy. And initially it didn't look like it was working, but it almost becomes self-hyping. There's folks in all over the place who can now suddenly actually get crypto exposure because their mandate says, well, you've got to buy a listed, NASDAQ or NYSE listed stock. Couldn't buy crypto. Now you can.
Now you can, right? Now
you're
you
paying 2x for it effectively, but...
Yeah, but I mean, if it's either that, so buy a $300 stock or go buy Bitcoin at $68,000, which is what one of our local guys has done in Altvest. They've gone out and bought Bitcoin and they're now going into holding Bitcoin as well, which...
Yeah, it's a strategic reserve to secure you against macro something, yeah.
Something.
They bought a Bitcoin.
They bought a Bitcoin, right? But that's, again, what we're coming to is the growing popularity of how to access the world of cryptocurrencies. Now that institutional money is getting involved as well, you're going to now see, I suppose, more stable movements, less volatile movements. You are still seeing quite a bit of volatility in the Bitcoin price. but you're likely to see a more controlled kind of rise up, rise down cycles starting to come into effect, less demand supply driven, because the instos hold quite a bit of those coins and they can now influence things.
So it should start to bring, and it's what will happen as it matures. Because right now, what is Bitcoin? It's not a currency. It's not a store of wealth. It's not a hedge against inflation.
It's been pitched as a store of wealth.
I know. It's a volatile option on the S&P 500, right? It is a volatile risk on or risk off, depending which way you want to trade it. That will perhaps over time sort of kind of edge its way out as it gets more and more adoption. Look, I hold some crypto.
I wonder though. So, I mean, from a store of wealth perspective, gold has always been that historic store of value, and gold prices now at all time highs, still heading for that $3,000 mark, $3,000 an ounce level. How do we, I mean, everybody's always come out and said, oh no, Bitcoin is the new gold, it will replace gold and all of that. And the volatility that's been caused by Orange Mussolini has been evidence that gold will always have a place in people's hearts. He now, side note, we're going on a little side quest here. He now wants to go and count the gold bars inside Fort Knox.
Hey, well, I didn't realize they haven't counted those since 1974.
They haven't done that in a while, yeah. So is he going to sit there with an abacus?
I think he's going to do a photo op and then get the hell out of Dodge, is my sense. But I mean, is Bitcoin the gold? Not at all. Not at all. And I mean, I know lots of folks say it's digital gold and stuff. Well, maybe it is, but it's not gold in the sense that gold has utility. And in the sense, so let's be clear, gold is much more easier to store and be safe. It doesn't require a huge amount of electricity to keep my gold going. And I also hold myself some gold. The problem with crypto, I mean, there was another hack on another exchange this weekend. Apparently it was
$1.5 billion.
$1.5 billion. A very clear thing. If you hold crypto, man, if it's not you, not your keys, not your crypto, put it in a hard wallet.
Yeah. And you mentioned that because the exchange that was hacked is the second largest exchange in the world, I believe. So that clearly shows you that if that can be hacked in the digital age that we live in, then maybe we should go back to the Stone Age and go back to cryptos. But, I mean, and go back to gold. But that's not for us to decide. If members of our community have a view on crypto, we'd love to hear it. We're not saying crypto is bad, but as Sai said, it's not gold. We're going to update the wall. We're going to add something interesting to the wall. We don't often look in this realm, but Sai particularly likes the currencies at the moment.
So 1830 is a big number on the ZAR. Go look at a weekly chart going back. How many years is my weekly chart going back? Plenty, plenty, plenty years. And for some reason, it just decided it didn't want to play.
Weekly chart?
Yeah, weekly chart.
Okay, I've got it. 1830.
1830, right. Just like all the way back. I mean, this we were playing there mid-22, the late-22. Through most of 23, 24, we keep on coming back to that 1830.
Yeah, I mean, look at that. It's right in the middle of everything. Yeah.
Big fight. We got there this morning when I woke up at 4:45. We were trading at 1830. Mm. We've now weakened out. That is a big fight space. And if that breaks, I mean, 1780, 1720, 1680, all these crazy numbers we've heard suddenly start to come into play in a heck of a hurry. And I think it's going to break. And I think the break more than anything perhaps is going to be less about rand strength, more about dollar weakness. I want to sell dollars.
Okay. Why would there be dollar weakness other than...
So we saw this, I mean, a couple of things. We saw this in the Orange One's first term.
Yes.
Where when he came in, there was a significant dollar strength, the DXY, which is the way I track it. It was doing great. And we saw it again now. And the short answer is that America is being, and this plays out more long term than short term, but it'll have short term implications as well. America has been planet Earth's grandpa and policeman and nurse and, you know, just some of everything. Just general good oak or oakette. Those days are over.
Okay.
Those days are just over. There was an FT editorial this weekend, which basically said to Europe, yeah, guys, awkward that we have to break this to you, but America's no longer on your side.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, what we're seeing with Ukraine, et cetera, yes, et cetera. Yes. And that's going to continue through. What's happening with Musk and his doggy group, doggy daycare peeps, is you know, the idea of cutting fat, and we were talking a moment ago about our local budget and stuff, auditors, forensic auditors, you just don't go in there and say, yeah, I don't like this publication, cancel it and save $30,000. You're trying to save a trillion. You know, you say, oh, I've canceled an $8 billion contract, except it's an $8 million contract. It's a 3-year contract and $6 million of it has been spent. You go in with purpose and authority. What instead is happening is that they're weakening America. Mm. And I give you examples. Park rangers are being fired because what did you do last week? Nothing.
I saw that. I saw a comment, two things. One around every federal employee now needs to send through an email of sorts around what they did last week.
So who's going to read these 700,000 emails or however many it is? Secondly, you're a park ranger. What did you do last week? Nothing. You know why? Because no one fell off a mountain and there wasn't a fire.
But when there is a fire, you want me around.
And you're going to work 7 days, 24 hours type of thing. And again, it goes back to who's going to read these emails. The man at the FBI, I mean, to be clear, he sells T-shirts and vitamin supplements on a thingy-majig. He's got Mersh. So his name's Cash, K-A-S-H, and he does it with a dollar sign and stuff like that. I mean, dodgy stuff. I mean, the guy who's their Minister of Defense was a talking head on Fox. I mean, talk around inefficient government. I mean, America is gutting itself from the inside. Now, this doesn't play out this month, this year, even this term.
Yes.
But if Trump continues this for 4 years and we get, I mean, this is the gutting of America. Every single superpower on this planet, bar one, has collapsed. The one that hasn't is America. And that's because they're only 200 odd years old. You're watching the end.
Just to circle back to what you said, you said FBI and you said Cash. You were referring to the director of FBI, Mr. The man, Cash Patel, the new director.
The big man in charge.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
He sold supplements.
Yeah, he's also and he's also got some deal with some Chinese tech firms. And it is dodge. Remember in the olden days when presidents would declare their tax returns and put their assets into blind holdings? Now we've got an FBI director who's got connections to China via he did some consulting for some crypto. I forget the details. Just dodgy stuff. Stuff that you should not be allowed to run. Well, maybe you could run a school PTA. Maybe a school PTA. The FBI?
Don't let your current job stop you from dreaming big. That's what we're taking from this. If you currently want to be the director of the National Prosecuting Authority in South Africa, which I guess would be close enough. You know what? Apply. You never know what's going to happen, because apparently in the United States, you can apply for any job and you might just get it. That's not what we're adding to the wall. We are adding the rand to the wall. We are bullish on the rand, which means we are shorting the dollar, which means we could potentially be shorting either the DXY, the dollar index, or we could just go straight for it and go for a play against the USD ZAR. That would be a direct play on the rand and less on the US dollar in general, which, as Sai said, might not happen now, might happen over a bit of time. And
the DXY has moved from 110 to 106.5, which for that index, and that has been since 13 Jan, call it 6 weeks, that is a monster move.
6 weeks.
Yeah.
That's a monster. Okay, there we go. You heard the monster move. You heard where where we stand on it, what we're going to put on the wall. Please remember, folks, not financial advice. The disclaimer's on the show. Don't come back and say we told you to do this and that's what we're liking. That's how we feel about something. You have your own feelings. Please trust your own feelings. Do your own research and don't blame us when that doesn't go according to plan. Otherwise, it makes for a very awkward conversation after the fact. But our unfiltered opinion of the week, this week, courtesy of Sai, what are we looking at?
Joburg is not a failing city. It's a failed city. Potholes, no water, broken robots. The city has failed.
We're going to leave the show on that note. Thanks for tuning in. If you've missed our episodes, you know where to catch up on them. The live stream, the social pages, they're all updated. All of our episodes release on a weekly basis, so you can catch up on them at any point in time. And until next time, investing isn't hard. Just try it.